White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Hour two of White Sox Weekly, our season preview episode. Welcome back. I'm Connor McKnight. Plenty of time to get in touch with the show. Had a packed first hour. General Manager Rick Hahn hung out with us for a little while. Former Sox first baseman Paul Konerko was on the show. In case you missed any of the first hour, you can always check out the podcast at WLSAM.com/White Sox. I'll tweet out the link once everything's up a little bit later this afternoon. At C1 McKnight is the Twitter handle. You can follow and leave everything on the Twitter handle for the mailbag and check out the podcast there at C1 McKnight. You can hit us up on the phone lines, 312-591-8900 as well. Plenty of time for your phone calls throughout the afternoon. One interview left to get done. Jason Benetti, through the magic of radio, is going to join us while he's broadcasting a White Sox game. He is a talented man, and we're going to put him to the test a little bit later on this afternoon, but that's not until after the 1:30 news. And from now until then, it's you and it's me and talking White Sox baseball. You can enjoy all the benefits of being a White Sox season ticket holder by purchasing a prorated full or split season ticket package. To purchase a season ticket package, please visit whitesox.com or call 312-674-1000 and do it today. We've got a 25-man roster. White Sox and Brewers getting set to go at Miller Park right now, but we have a 25-man roster all set and ready for you. Broke down some of the position players a little bit earlier in the show. Want to give that a little more love. Want to work that down just a little bit more. 13 position players, which to me is a little bit surprising. Thought maybe it'd be 13 pitchers. It's not, and I only thought it would be so because of Carlos Rodon, and he's going to start the season on the disabled list. However, flip side of that coin is with the White Sox having two off days in the first week or so of the season on April 4th and April 10th, and gives Ricky Renteria a little bit of flexibility, a couple of options in the pitching staff. No decision on a fifth. Well, I suppose we'll get to the pitchers later. I promised some talk about the start, the position players. Let's stick with that. Come on, Connor. Stick to the plan. Three outfielders, Melky Cabrera, Jacob May, and Avisel Garcia, of course. Two utility players is what I'm calling Cody Ashe and Luis Garcia. Both of them can play a little bit of outfield, a little bit of infield. Luis Garcia came up an infielder, and the White Sox kind of pushed him into the outfield to make him a little bit more versatile and take this job this year, or at least take that a job this year. Ashe, of course, can play in the corners, in the outfield, and in the infield, and I think he'll get some DH spot as well. We talked about Cody Ashe making it. For my money, injuries to pitchers aside, you know, because those can always kind of crop up throughout the course of spring and change the calculus for a roster. But injuries aside to pitchers, the fact that Cody Ashe makes this team, probably the most surprising thing coming out of spring. I mean, when he was added as a non-roster guy, former prospect shine aside, I hadn't given him much of a thought of making this club. Turns out he's had one heck of a spring. I think he's shown something, a little bit of power is the something, to White Sox coaches, and that's somewhat intriguing in a lineup that could use a little bit of pop from the right side or the left side, to be honest with you. So Ashe, who's going to hit from the left, makes this team. You've got six infielders: Todd Frazier, Tim Anderson, Tyler Saladino, and Jose Abreu from left to right across the diamond. Yolmer Sanchez is your, you know, kind of your Johnny Everything. You can play a second. You can play short. Play a little bit of third if he has to. Tyler Saladino can play everything, too. I mean, that's and he's across the diamond. He's been played first base more than Yolmer has. Matt Davidson makes this club, too. Writing was on the wall there. I think we talked about that at the outset of the show. It made a lot of sense for Matt Davidson to make this club. He indeed did. The broken foot. He was part of the White Sox rookie crew that were all set back by injuries last season, and he's here and ready to go. Omar Narvaez and Giovanni Soto are indeed your starting catchers. Very little surprise there, although we mentioned that Ricky Renteria hasn't announced exactly who is going to get that opening day start yet. Kind of mentioned that catching Jose Quintana to start things off, not a terrible assignment for a catcher. It's put the glove there, he'll hit the glove, move on to the next pitch. That said, you know, Soto being a veteran, And with the catching situation, what it is in the White Sox system, Narvaez kind of an up-and-comer, maybe an out-of-nowhere type guy last season. The White Sox had some hopes for him, but I don't think they expected him to realize major league playing time last year that early in his developmental curve. I don't think they expected him to be as consistent as he was at the plate. While Omar doesn't offer or didn't last season a whole lot in the way of power, they were pretty good at bats from Omar Narvaez last year, controlled and patient at bats, where he looked like he had a plan up there. And the average stayed fairly high. On base was okay. Slug wasn't quite there, but heck, you get any kind of consistent offense from the catcher spot in this game. I mean, there are what? A handful of catchers that really kind of mash. You know, you think of your Jonathan Lucroy's. There are, you know, Wilson Ramos last year, though he's injured and not going to start the year on time for the Tampa Bay Rays, move on for the Nationals. But you know, a handful, like Buster Posey, of course, Yadier Molina, maybe, although his offense has slipped some since he, you know, turned 30 a few years ago. There are a few that offer you offense and pop, not many. And if you're getting consistent defense, solid defense, I mean, you look at a guy like Mike Zunino for the Seattle Mariners, a guy that White Sox fans have seen quite a bit. The defense is fantastic. The offense has been at times atrocious, and he gives you a little bit of pop. You can find, if you're an organization looking for a catcher, you find quality defense, a offensive trait that's brought consistently to the dish, whether that's power, whether that's average, whether that's patience, whatever one thing you can find, I think that's, you know, you kind of put that check mark down on the list, and that's your starting catcher. Omar's still got some work to do to prove that he's, you know, a one, I suppose. But with Soto backing him up, you've got some veteran presence there. And really, as we kind of started this talk about, you know, who's going to be that opening day catcher, does it matter all that much? What's the timeshare going to look like? I think those are all pretty valid questions that Ricky Renteria will answer over the next month or two. You look down into the minor leagues, and I think for a lot of these positions, for a lot of you know, spots where there are veterans playing now, who's next is going to be the question that a lot of White Sox fans will be asking. As Rick Hahn has stated, trades are going to be made, whether that's Todd Frazier, whether that's Melky Cabrera, whether that's David Robertson in the bullpen, whether that's Jose Quintana in the rotation. You know, who's next is going to be a question asked fairly often. That answer is going to depend quite a bit on who comes back in some of those trades, obviously. I mean, you would imagine that if some of those veterans are shipped out, if especially some of that higher-end talent is moved, the returns are going to be somewhat similar to that Chris Sale deal, are going to be somewhat similar to that Adam Eaton deal. That certainly seems to be why Rick Hahn has preached patience on some of those trades, whether that be the Quintana deal or others. That certainly seems to be why, or at least how, this rebuild is going to be stocked. But for the catcher's position, you know, one of those answers might be there now. You know, with Zach Collins, first overall pick from the by the White Sox in this last year's draft, I got to tell you, as far as, you know, spring recaps go, taking a look back at where we were 6-7 weeks ago and where we're at now, I know Zach did some really solid work while he was in major league camp, and the work will continue in minor league camp. I think a question was answered, or at least to my satisfaction, that he's got a real decent chance, a better chance than I think a lot of people gave him, to stick behind the plate. His work there, at least starting block-wise, was much better than I'd been led to believe by some, you know, outside of the White Sox scouting reports. And I put it that way because every organization should have a pretty high expectation for their first overall pick in the draft, right? I mean, if you take him, that's why. That's, you know, it stands to reason. Outside looking in, there had been some questions about it, and I think Zach Collins, via his worth ethic and, you know, what he showed you, has been kind of impressive. He's a ways out, but at least when you look at the catcher spot, and that's kind of where we started this conversation about the 13 players, position players on this roster, I think he's proved to be a big-time prospect in the Sox organization. And certainly there are others. We'll get to those on the other side of a quick break. We'll also break down where Ricky Renteria can go with the rotation and the bullpen, as that's been set up too. We'll go through the 12 pitchers. They're going to be on the White Sox 25-man roster when they start Monday, 3:10 against the Detroit Tigers. Keep it here. White Sox Weekly, WLS, AM 890.
Start your day with Big John and Ray. Now heard weekday mornings 6 till 10 on WLS, AM 890.
You got White Sox Weekly here on WLS, AM 890. Going to go through the mailbag here in a couple of minutes, but wanted to get to the pitchers that are going to make this White Sox squad. Coming up on Monday, you could see the White Sox take on the Cleveland Indians, though, Friday, April 21st at 7:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans in attendance receive a White Sox tote bag presented by MLB Network. Be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show presented by MLB Network. Purchase your tickets today by visiting WhiteSox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. So we've gone through the position players and spent a little bit of time on the catcher spot. I think that's an interesting one. I think whether or what Omar Narvaez brings to the table will be of interest for White Sox fans. Of course, elsewhere around the diamond, it's, you know, how is Todd Frazier a long-term extension candidate? Is he a trade target of other teams? Melky Cabrera, where does he end up? This is his last year under contract with the White Sox. David Robertson, that question exists there too, though it's a little bit of a different contract situation. And as we move to the pitchers, it's going to be at the back end of making this, because I think, you know, Sox fans knew, I mean, you knew who was going to make this squad for sure, right? I mean, obviously Jose Quintana, James Shields, Derek Holland, Miguel Gonzalez were there in the rotation. David Robertson, Nate Jones, Dan Jennings, Zach Putnam, Jake Petrischka, they were all going to be there for you too. And there was a question of whether they were going to carry another lefty, whether and having Carlos Rodon start the season on the disabled list shakes things up in the rotation, to be sure. So here are your answers. Anthony Swarzak is going to make the club. Another non-roster invitee makes it. Dylan Covey, a Rule 5 pick, has made the squad. And Michael Ynoa, who was out of options and threw fairly well last year. There were, you know, a little bit of a concerns about consistency at times, but in his first go through the bigs, I was fairly impressed with some of the stuff Michael Ynoa was. It was tough to hit. Walked a few, to sure. Tough to hit, though, when he was plugging the zone. So here's what's interesting about the rotation to me, and Ricky Renteria talked a bit about it yesterday prior to the game, that, you know, and we mentioned the off days. Get the calendar out in front of me. I'm useless without it. The second day of the season, which is April 2nd, April 3rd. April 3rd? Yeah. They got the off day. And then again on the 10th, you've got another off day. So in theory, you can shuffle that rotation around to the point where you don't need a fifth starter until Sunday the 9th against Minnesota. Whether that's going to be Anthony Swarzak or Dylan Covey, apparently that's up for grabs a little bit here. They haven't necessarily made that decision. But what if this, and I'd asked around about this, and it wasn't completely shot down, although it'd be a little bit unconventional, so I'll just offer you that. Maybe there's a chance to do kind of a piggyback situation if Carlos Rodon, and the 10th, we just talked with Rick Renteria earlier on in the show, I'm sorry, Rick Hahn earlier on in the show. We talked a bit about Carlos and kind of where that, when that reevaluation comes around. He said about April 10th. So the 9th, perhaps you get a piggyback type start from Anthony Swarzak and Dylan Covey. Swarzak still being stretched out. Something like the 3 or maybe 4 innings is probably what he could be expected to throw come April 9th. Covey has been a little bit more stretched out than that, but you know, still I don't know that 70, 80 pitches might be kind of the number for him. I'm speculating a bit. But I wonder if you use those two guys and then go back to Jose Quintana on that full rest because of the off days and kind of shuffle some things around there. We'll have to see. I think a lot of it will depend on the health of Carlos Rodon, which Han said was pretty good. He's feeling pretty solid over the last couple of days. Of course, he's in that throwing program right now. The biggest question, though, about the rotation, fifth starter aside, and when Carlos Rodon comes back, because to be sure, a big part of the White Sox future has something to do with Carlos Rodon and his kind of ascension. Does he take the reins and become that second ace? Is he next in line for the top of the rotation in the White Sox organization? I think he is. Health is going to be a big factor in that. And hopefully this bursitis is just kind of a blip on the radar screen. Because I think, and you can look at it from a couple of different ways. I've read some analysis of the last 11 starts or so that Rodon made, where, You know, he got away with a few things, though the strikeouts were up, and I think pretty important to him. Man, he saw that last start against the Minnesota Twins where he struck out, I think, seven in a row straight to start a game. I mean, my God, stuff was filthy. And I think as he kind of got paired more with Omar Narvaez down the stretch, there was a little bit more comfortability there. There was an ability on Narvaez's part to kind of catch the low strike, bring that thing up, help him out with the slider that he likes to throw down there. I have fairly high expectations for Carlos Rodon this year. I know he does, and I think the White Sox do too. You got to get him healthy, though. I mean, he'll pitch when he's ready. Other than Rodon and where he's at, obviously, and this might be the biggest little piece of information, this might be the biggest force driving the White Sox season this year, is what happens with Jose Quintana. White Sox haven't made any secrets about it. And I think, you know, as you look to the future of this organization, you can make a pretty fair argument either way on Q. There's value. He's got 4 years left on his deal. He's 28. He's one of the best left-handers in baseball. Certainly in that top 15 kind of range. No doubt about it. He's still kind of coming into his own. I wonder, and Ed and DJ have talked about this a lot during the broadcast, with Jose Quintana, steadiness, consistency, reliability have been huge trademarks for him. But that's not to say that the stuff isn't there. It obviously is. You got to have it to get it done. But I wonder if there's a next step for Jose. I wonder if there is more. And I think, you know, being more consistent, throwing more strikes, you know, being Jose can work deeper counts, deeper than maybe his command and control would lead you to believe. You know, if he's able to be a little bit more efficient, and I guess this is the trick for anybody with the kind of resume that Quintana has, if he's able to be a little bit more efficient, the numbers could go even higher. If those two strike counts turn into easy outs or strikeouts with a little bit more regularity, and it seems so weird to be, you know, splitting hairs with a guy as talented as Jose Quintana, and yet that's where you are at age 28 season. Does that aging curve hit, you know, perfectly for Jose Quintana this year? Does the comfortability of being around, of having to go this next time through, he's a number one, top of the list. It'll be kind of interesting to see what he's got, what that next step for him is, both on the field and off the field. Obviously, he's perhaps the biggest piece on the trade market now. And might be, you know, you look around potential, you know, moves that could be made around baseball. Chris Archer kind of comes to mind. Sonny Gray, if he'd stayed healthy, kind of comes to mind. Man, Jose Quintana's right up there. And the White Sox, and this has kind of been the story since the end of the 2016 season, the White Sox kind of control this trade market. And I think it's important, and Rick's said it a number of times, it's important that you don't make a deal just to make a deal. And I think the patience and the fact that we haven't seen one yet says that's exactly where the Sox heads are at right now, and that's where they ought to be. Sox lead the Brewers 1-0, top of the second. Game going on right now. On the other side of the 1:30 news, we will talk to the man who's calling the game through the magic of radio, Jason Benetti, going to join us on White Sox Weekly after the news. I'm Connor McKnight. You've got WLS AM 890.
WLS is more meaningful.
America is once again ready to lead.
WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, and joining us, the voice of the White Sox, Jason Benetti, who is actually right now broadcasting the game for the White Sox. Thanks for joining us, Jason. Really appreciate it. Your ability to be in two places at once is unparalleled, my friend.
Look, ventriloquism is really advanced now in 2017, so I'm glad to be a part of it.
Let me ask you this. It is my second year with the White Sox and being a part of the broadcast. It is yours as well. How is Jason Benetti different now as we approach your second opening day than he was a year ago?
Hang on one sec. There's a ground ball to short. I got to call it real fast. No, I think the big difference for me is simply when I encounter somebody at the complex now, the Sox complex in Arizona or in Chicago or whatever it might be, that's it's not the first time I've met them. I think that absolutely helps. So that's part of it. And another part of it is simply that you end up really understanding what the team is trying to do a little bit more. You have better relationships. You get the second or third conversation with somebody. That's huge.
You're being versed in this organization and its history brings so much to the broadcast. I mean, can you even quantify that, or is it just too innate to even appreciate?
Well, sometimes I just say things like Kirk McCaskill in the middle of the show.
Sure.
No, it's that there's great value to it. I know my way around the ballpark. I've seen the ballpark sight lines. I when I see Frank Thomas and, you know, Robin last year and Harold Baines, like, I watched them growing up, so I know what their swings looked like. I know what types of players they were, and you live it. And so you feel it. So that's, you know, that's obviously terribly helpful, but also, you know, just kind of the esoteric players. Like, I grew up watching Warren Newsom and Chris Sabo in Sox uniforms. You know, there's just a comfort level with the players. So, you know, that's very helpful.
What surprised you most as you went down to Arizona and took a look at this ball club that is going through so many changes and potentially more? Were there big surprises about players, coaches, organizational philosophy that hit you at this point?
My surprise came in early November. I was doing a Q&A with fans and Ricky Renteria. And I had talked to Ricky at points last year, talked to him about his draft day and some other stories and things like that. But I hadn't talked to him at great length as a leader of men. And watching him with season ticket holders and describing the team that he wanted with the energy that he had, it was terribly impressive. I mean, he jumped out. It was really exceptional. And so that was my first surprise, is his personality just living off of his sleeve. So that was really important. And then number two, when I get down to spring training, there's kind of a camaraderie with these young players. It's almost like a college type atmosphere in terms of wanting to be together and the best together and grow together. There's kind of a camaraderie there that I didn't necessarily expect, and you don't always see in a pro clubhouse.
So it is my understanding, Jason, that you have interviews with a good number of the top 30 prospects in the White Sox organization, and those will be at different points during the season kind of disseminated and broadcast to White Sox fans. What brought about that series of interviews? Was that your idea? What made you want to do it? And what kind of things can we expect from those?
It was a group idea. I mean, it was certainly part of the organizational philosophy in the off season. So some of us had discussions over how we could handle it, and what came of it with me and the Sox in discussing it is the ability to sit down and chat with some of these guys about where they came from and who they are and what makes them tick. And so you're going to see some of that every day on our show. There will be some minor league report every game that we do this year, whether it be home, road, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a taste of the minors because, I mean, that's where the organization is building. The Sox have a bona fide top five farm system. And with technology these days, we have the ability to follow them. And I guarantee you that the Sox brass is going to have eyes on the field this year, but there's also going to be a little peripheral vision during the games of watching AAA, AA, Single A. That was happening last year. That was happening the year before, even without the large haul that came in the offseason. So why shouldn't our telecast mirror that a little bit?
What's your job as it pertains to trade rumors throughout the course of the season?
Not get traded myself.
With a player to be named later, Jason Benetti has been dealt to Seattle.
Do I get to name the player? I just name a player. That's
yep,
great.
That's
so the idea is, if they're happening and they're pervasive, they exist, right? I mean, we're not saying that somebody's going to get traded, but yes, I mean, that's part of what's going on in the clubhouse, especially if a player says it, right? If a player is talking about that as a possibility, it is affecting the clubhouse in one way or the other, whether it be extensively or just a little bit. And I think it's just the editorial process. How much is it really important to the telecast that day that we talk about trade rumors? I mean, look, the 24-hour news cycle is such that we can talk about the headline news every minute of every day and get nowhere. right? So I think it's a triage aspect. We have to decide how important is it? Does it overwhelm us and do we need to talk about it? Or is it something that really will go away in 32 seconds and won't be, you know, it depends on the source. It depends on how many people. It depends on what the team says. There are so many different aspects to it that we just have to make a case-by-case decision.
What's new on the broadcast this year? I know MLB and MLB Advanced Media is pushing this the catch probability thing, which I think is pretty cool. How now do we look at, or do we get to look at on the broadcast, the advanced metrics, the stuff that the inside baseball kind of stuff that front offices use to evaluate players?
As of today, that still is being 100% locked in, exactly how much we can convey StatCast stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's by a contractual situation with BAM. We're just working on the technology exactly what it was. I think over the course of this season, you're going to see a development in that regard. So I don't know exactly what we can offer today, but there will be some more StatCast stuff, I'm told, over the course of the season. Again, it's when it's relevant. So we're going to have to make that decision, there will be some more of that, and we have a few tricks up our sleeve too.
Does that include Sox math? How does that change in year two? Does every answer just get multiplied by two? Is it divided by two? Is it exponential? How do we work that?
This is breaking news, Connor. I have not told this to anybody.
Oh my god!
But Sox math is done.
No, you're kidding.
Yeah,
me.
I mean, just no. It is. Hey, we had a problem with a sponsor. Didn't like it. And no more Sox math.
This is awful. Are you all
it's
right?
It's April 1st, Connor. It's April 1st.
I hate April 1st so much.
No, Sox math is back with a vengeance. It's Sox math 2, you know, whatever the sequel is.
Electric Boogaloo. Your dejection in your voice sold me on that. I hate so much about the things that you choose to be. Ugh. I thought I was gonna have to tweet this out. I thought we were gonna have to talk about this like in earnest with callers next. You're the worst.
There's a psychological representative on the way to the studio right now to help you with this.
If I had to pick the person that was gonna try and pull an April Fool's prank, I would never have expected Jason Benetti.
Well, you know, it's not too kitschy for me. Nothing's too kitschy for me. So here's the thing. Sox math will be a little different this year. There's going to be weekend Sox math, which, you know, your weekends are kind of leisurely, right?
They are.
You want to have fun on the weekend. So Sox math is going to be a little more leisurely on the weekend. It is going to be its typical difficult self during the weekday. But I think people deserve a break on the weekend. So it might be a little less complicated on the weekend.
All right. So kind of like a reverse New York Times crossword puzzle philosophy.
Yeah, you know, that's what we're going for.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly.
I think that's it.
I'm sure that's exactly how you pitched it to the higher-ups. Jason, appreciate your time, my friend. I know you got a ball game to get to. Through the magic of radio, we're talking to you while you're talking to White Sox fans. It's crazy, but it's true.
It's a long drive. Deep left.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us, my man. We will we'll see you opening day.
Sounds great. Appreciate it, Connor.
Absolutely. That's White Sox broadcaster Jason Benetti, who, despite his trying to pull an April Fool's prank, is actually a nice guy. No worries, Sox math is back. He was just kidding. Everything's fine. 312-591-8900. We will wrap things up on the other side of a quick break. We'll also bring you Jacob May, White Sox center fielder. Had a chance to talk with him for a few minutes yesterday. That's all next on WLS AM 890.
Have a great weekend. We're back Monday morning from 35th and Bilvec Drive.
Hope springs eternal, not only for this radio show, but for the White Sox as well. We'll give it to you all Monday morning.
John and Ray, WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Closing it up here. Final segment of the show before we start baseball. That feels good to say. Opening day on Monday. You can see the White Sox take on the Cleveland Indians Friday, April 21st, 7:10 p.m. First 20,000 fans in attendance will receive a White Sox tote bag presented by MLB Network. Be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show. That's also presented by MLB Network. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. Just a couple of minutes left here on the show. I got a chance and hadn't talked with Jacob May much in spring training. Just kind of, yeah, spring's long, but I was only down there for about 2 weeks. And, of course, you're going to miss some guys as it goes. And to be honest, when I was down there the first 2 weeks of spring, I I wouldn't have called Jacob May making this team right off the bat. A chance, sure. Possibilities. Darn good defensive outfielder, but, you know, had a little bit of work to do with the stick. And, you know, at the time you had Charlie Tilson coming back from an injury. He had yet to have the second setback. And Peter Borges was also still on the roster. So Jacob May seemed like a couple of things needed to shake out for him to make the squad. Turns out he did. And the first thing I did when we were sitting down in the dugout in Milwaukee is congratulate him for making the team.
It's exciting. I appreciate it. I'm just really blessed and I'm grateful.
At what point during the spring did you think, you know, because I'm sure you showed up and knew that you were going to show them what you could do. At what point during the spring did you realize this was going to be real, that you were very close?
There was no real certain point. I mean, I knew day in and day out I had to be consistent. So, every day leading up until I got the news, I didn't really guarantee anything. You never know in this game. So, I just try to stay consistent, go out there and do my best and play hard.
What was the difference in this spring and a couple of the springs prior, last spring, the spring before? Did you feel different? Did the results come easier? Was the learning process easier?
Yeah, I mean, every offseason I put in a lot of work, so I think it's just starting to all kind of flourish and come together. And, I got a chance to be in Big League Camp last spring, so that helped coming into this spring a little bit as far as being comfortable, getting to know the staff and some of the players and the faces in the locker room. So I was a little bit more comfortable. I kind of knew what to expect this time coming into spring, so that was enjoyable.
For White Sox fans who haven't been able to watch a ton of spring training baseball, describe your game. What do you bring when you're out there in center field? What kind of player do you fancy yourself as?
Oh, speed and athleticism. Any way I can help the team win. So, I mean, whether that's taking away a hit, stealing a bag, anything that I can, impact the game with my legs, I'm going to try to do. So, I feel like I'm pretty blessed with some good athleticism and speed, so I try to incorporate that in my game.
The front office has talked a lot about incorporating speed more and athleticism from a top-down kind of thing. Tim Anderson's as fast as all get out. Yoan Moncada's got some wheels. You're very fast. I mean, do you guys see that as an opportunity to make something happen when you're out there?
Yes, definitely. I mean, athleticism and speed, it's hard to come about, and I think our organization is really deep in it. I mean, it's impressive, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, growing up and coming through this organization with Tim, 1 and 2 in the lineup or wherever we may be, we've made a good impact throughout our careers in the minor leagues. So it's definitely a game changer, and it's fun.
Is knowing when to pick your spots something that you learn along the way, or is that an instinct that guys are gifted with, you think?
No, I think throughout experience you start to learn when is a good time to run, when it's not. You learn to do your homework and on the pitcher and try to pick up on his tendencies and stuff like that. So I think that comes with experience, and the more you play the game, the more you'll start to pick up on pitchers' tendencies and when's a good time to run and when it's not.
Sox have a couple of young outfielders in the system, guys like Alex Call and Jameson Fisher, and you're kind of the first of that young outfield crop to come up. Who's helped you most throughout the minor leagues in getting here, whether it be defensively or offensively, by being a young outfielder like that?
Well, I mean, I think every step of the way, all of the staffs throughout the organization have helped me in some way or another. Everyone's touched me throughout my career. I mean, even Doug Sisson, who's not even with the White Sox anymore, he touched me. Aaron Rowan, they do a great job of bringing in guys left and right that have helped me throughout my career so far with the White Sox, that have helped me, through each level.
That's White Sox outfielder Jacob May, who is in center field right now and was in center field yesterday for the Sox. He's been a fun guy to talk to. He is absolutely jacked to make the squad, and he should be. Of course, nephew of Carlos May, former White Sox outfielder, a guy who knew how to handle a fastball, to be sure. I find it interesting, and as much as we've talked about the big-time prospects in this organization, right, the ones that have propelled it to a top-five system, we just talked with Jason Panetti, who's doing the broadcast right now, about the White Sox being on top of a lot of farm system rankings or in that top five. There are a lot of others that are outside a White Sox top 10 that are interesting dudes. Future Sox, which is one of the blogs that covers some of the minor leaguers and does a great job of doing it for White Sox fans, is out there and has brought up some of those young kids like Alex Call, like Jameson Fisher, Luis Alexander Basabe, who would be in a top 10 but also fits the bill for a young outfield prospect that's kind of on the come. I think those guys, might be as important to the franchise or might be, I guess, hopping into that top 10 list sooner rather than later. I guess the hope is this season, and we've talked a lot about what this season may mean for some of the veterans on this squad, whether they're going to be here or whether they're going to be moved elsewhere for other pieces. But for some of the younger kids, not on the 25-man roster, obviously, graduation dates are hopefully coming. Now, the White Sox have stressed that they're not going to rush anybody. I think that's the right play. But that's not to say that Yoan Moncada and Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito and Carson Fulmer, they may all have call-ups on the way. Adam Engel could be another guy who's on the way at some point this season. Certainly a guy who's also in that top 10, or at least would be if it hadn't been called up last year, depending on how you put your systems together, I guess. Charlie Tilson, when he's healthy at some point this year, is going to be another young outfielder that's thrown into the mix. And I suppose as we look through that 25-man roster that Ricky Renteria has put together, there will be changes to it, even just from the standpoint of, you know, not so much call-ups, but adding guys back who are on that major. Carlos Rodon's going to come back at some point in the next couple of weeks. Charlie Tilson, hopefully in the month of April, will come back as well. And, you know, that's going to move some guys out. You know, that's going to send some guys down. And that's, you know, as always, the White Sox and any other ball club is not going to finish the year with the 25 guys that they started with. That said, I think it'll be really interesting to watch some of those young players, and we will do the best we can. We talked with Jason about it. Their broadcast is going to focus a lot on the minor leagues when that warrants, and we are too on the postgame show and here on White Sox Weekly. We're going to bring you a minor league roundup every single Saturday and let you know what some of the top prospects in the White Sox organization have done over the past week. During the post-game shows, if some of the big guys are pitching, or maybe you got a couple of dingers from some of the young hitters, we're going to bring you that news as well. So, you know, we understand, or at least we're going to try and understand and bring you exactly what you want to know about the White Sox and about their system this season. Plenty to know about, or at least I want to let you know, about our plans on WLS for opening day. Do we have a phone call real quick? All right, we're going to sneak a phone call in before we get there. It's Mike in Byron. We lost Mike. Dial tone instead. All right, here's what I'll do. Let you know what we're doing on Monday. The entire station, the whole roster, is going to be out there for opening day. John and Ray are going to be in the Ed and DJ broadcast booth from 6 until 10, doing the show out at Guaranteed Rate Field. Bob and Marianne are at the Shy Sox Bar and Grill from 10 until noon. I'll be doing a hit with them before I head over to the clubhouse. We'll talk White Sox there at Shy Sox Bar and Grill. You can come over, say hi. Then I'm hanging out with Steve Dahl and the boys a little bit and I'll also be doing the pregame show from the Shy Sox Bar and Grill. That starts 2:35, first pitch 3:10, of course. We'll head things over to Ed and DJ. You'll hear from Ricky Renteria on the pregame show. You'll hear from Don Cooper on the pregame show. You'll hear from Ed and DJ, of course. We're going to get you set for opening day. It'll be an exciting one, to be sure. Jose Quintana and Justin Verlander on the hill. They're your matchup. You can join the 2017 Sox Pride Club for exclusive ticket offers, membership gifts, game day opportunities, ballpark tours, MLB.com, game day audio for your computer, and more. Visit SoxPrideClub.com to join today. If you're driving around, it means you've got stuff to do and you're listening to us, and we appreciate you chiming in and hanging out throughout the course of the afternoon. White Sox lead the Brewers 1-0, top four up in Milwaukee. Last one before we get things going for real. Our thanks to White Sox general manager Rick Hahn. Thanks to former White Sox first baseman Paul Konerko. And thanks to Jason Benetti, White Sox broadcaster, for joining us on our last White Sox Weekly before opening day of 2017. Thanks to Tyler as well for our producing our broadcast. Thanks for calling, texting. Most of all, thanks for listening. 2:35, your White Sox pregame show starts on Monday. Make sure you listen to the station all day long as we'll be out at the ballpark bringing you everything you need to know from Guaranteed Rate Field. Have a wonderful Saturday afternoon. Baseball starts Monday. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the proud home for White Sox baseball.